Welcome to episode one of Nampvar Brews. My name is Andy, and I'm a home brewer and beer lover based here in Cardiff in sunny Wales in the UK. Nampvar Brews is the name of my brewery. I call it a brewery, it's just me in my kitchen. And Nampvar in Welsh means big stream, which hopefully means there's plenty of good stuff on this pod. This podcast is about all things beer. We're talking home brewing, beer styles and tastes, chatting with people in the growing craft beer scene here in Cardiff and beyond, and it will always mean hearing people who are passionate about beer, whatever that may mean. The aim is to have great conversations inspired by beer, ideally over a beer. It's episode one and we are already going international. My guest today is from Tennessee in the United States. He's definitely a beer lover because he's visited over 115 microbreweries in the US. And he described his lockdown experience to me as drinking beer and reading trashy novels. It's Micah Ward. Micah, how are you?
I am wonderful, and I'm honored to be your first guest, Andy.
That's brilliant. You just said to me, oh, I hope my southern accent isn't too much of a problem. And I was like, it's brilliant. It shows that, you know, we are reaching parts of the world already. So, first question, are you having a beer while we have a chat?
Yes, I'm having a Hippies and Cowboy IPA from Tennessee Brew Works.
Okay, tell me about that beer and why you chose it and why you like it.
It's an IPA, which is my preferred style of beer. It's got an appropriate amount of bitterness, just a little bit of a citrus, and it's one of our local microbreweries. It's here in Nashville, Tennessee, and the first time that my wife and I went to it was on her birthday last year.
Oh, lovely. Okay, and what ABV is that coming in at?
This one is right around 7%.
Wow, okay. I mean, that's the thing with the American IPAs. They don't mess about, do they? They're pretty strong.
Yes, some of these, especially when you get into the Imperial IPAs, they get up there, some of them around 10%. They'll hit an IBU rating anywhere between 90 and 100. They just kind of punch you between the eyes.
I remember you saying, because I should explain, the way we met is via Medium, which is a kind of blogging platform, a writing platform. I'm on there as Andy Taylor Cardiff, and I think you're on there as Micah262. I wrote an article about homebrewing, and Micah kindly left a nice comment, and we got chatting through there. But I remember you saying that on one of your comments that your favorite beer in the world is like an Imperial IPA, and that must be coming in at what, 10, 11, 12?
That particular beer, Fulcrum Imperial IPA, and unfortunately it's no longer brewed. But it used to be brewed at Smiling Toad Brewery in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It was just over 100 IPU and 10% ABV.
When they're brewed right, they kind of hide the strength, don't they? You can't really taste that it's that strong.
Correct. This particular beer, it had kind of a sweet maltiness to it that helped offset the bitter hops. Now, there was certainly some bitterness there.
You'd chill your IPAs, would you? You'd drink them out of the fridge. Is that right?
Yes, we do.
I think I'm either American or Australian at heart because I like to kind of chill pretty much everything that I drink. And I know there's this thing about, oh, the English. I mean, I should point out there is a big difference between England and Wales. I could do a whole nother podcast on that. I sound English, but I live in Wales. I've been living in Wales for about 5 years now. But the English or British, we're known for drinking warm beer. This is this thing that everyone around the world, oh, you drink warm beer. And it's not strictly accurate. We drink our beer at what's called cellar temperature. And in the UK, because in the original pubs, you know, the cask beer was coming out of the cellar, which was down in the basement. That's, you know, not quite refrigeration temperature, but it's not far off. So I think the warm beer thing is inaccurate. But having said that, I do like to drink beers colder than a lot of people I know. But I think that can help with the strength as well, can't it? It can help you enjoy the flavors without getting put off by the strength.
Yes. I think here in America, and especially here in the South, you know, we get hit with temperatures where we're over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. We have a heavy humidity that goes along with that. The cold beers are refreshing.
You need that. At the end of a day, you need a cold beer.
That, and sometimes in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Well, this is, I was going to ask you about that, because this is your preferred way of drinking now. Now, I have to be careful how I say this. You're slightly older, more senior, and I don't know how you drank in your youth, but I think I'm right in saying that the way you like to drink, especially at a microbrewery now, is you turn up early and you leave early. Is that right?
That's right. I'm 66 years old. I'm lucky to be retired. I just prefer going earlier in the afternoon and get my drinking done and get home. Once I get home and get settled, as one of my friends says, I'll have an adult beverage. I'll get the scotch out.
I love that. That's brilliant. I should tell you what I'm drinking. So I'm drinking one of my own creations. When I started homebrewing, I started doing that thing that I think a lot of homebrewers do, where you go, oh, I can make these amazing labels and I'll give them incredible names. And you quickly get very bored of that because it's a lot of work. So now, you know, from having these amazing names that were like puns and clever little things, I now just put a single letter on my brews, because I've got this, you know, I used to bottle, I've now just started kegging, and I've got like a chalk pen. And so I can just easily, instead of writing lots of bottle labels, I can just put a letter. So this beer that I'm drinking is called KL. And someone said, does that stand for Kuala Lumpur? And I was like, no, it's not that exotic. It stands for keg lager, because it's the first lager that I brewed in my new keg setup. So just before I attempted to contact you on Skype, which was a fingers crossed moment, I went out to the garage and poured myself from my keg a kind of just under a pint of my keg lager, which is probably coming in at about 4.5%. It's very nice. It's got a little bit of hoppiness to it, probably more than your kind of standard commercial lager. But I actually brewed it because I'm meeting up with my friends in a few months, my old university friends, and all they drink is, you know, bog standard, what my other friend would call cooking lager, you know, 4%, 5% mass produced lager. I guess you'd compare it to a Budweiser or a Coors or something like that, or a Miller.
Okay.
That's what they drink. And so how do I open them up to my homebrew? Because, you know, my homebrew is more like the kind of beers you're drinking in the microbrewery. So I've tried to brew a lager that's kind of a halfway house, and this is what I've come up with. So that's what I'm drinking at the moment.
That sounds interesting. You said you're putting more hops in this one. Are you taking it more in the direction of, say, a Pilsner?
Yeah, it's based on a recipe for a Peroni. So Peroni, obviously an Italian lager,
yes.
And there's a Peroni Red that is got quite a kind of malty backbone. It's not meant to be that hoppy, but obviously it does have, you know, hops within it. This is one of the things I love about brewing. Well, it's so unpredictable. I've either hopped wrongly or differently or at a different time or something else, and this is just a bit more hop forward. I mean, I absolutely love it. I haven't, because it is a bit of a halfway house between a more craft ale and a more commercial lager, but I don't know what my friends will make of it. But, you know, most of my brews are just kind of wonderful mistakes.
Hey, that sometimes leads to outstanding beers.
Exactly. But then the problem is you've got to try and replicate it again, which is not always easy. Look, I'm loving this chat already, and I think I already know that me and you could talk beers for hours, but I really want to get onto this thing that I think is quite remarkable, that you've visited. Is it 115 microbreweries you've visited now?
Well, we're up to 120.
120. Congratulations. That's another milestone. So just talk me through how that came to happen.
My wife and I are originally from Georgia, Southeast U.S. We retired in 2011. Spring of 2012, we moved to Colorado Springs, Colorado. Colorado is a real hotbed of microbrewing in the United States. So the very first microbrewery that we visited was Trinity Brewing, right there in Colorado Springs. And we loved it. We loved the beer. We loved the atmosphere. And the more people we talked to, the more microbreweries we heard about. Oh, have you tried this one? Have you tried that one? So we started visiting every microbrewery we could find in the Colorado Springs area, and there were dozens. We then, after a few years, moved to Florida. We tried to find all the microbreweries we could. Now we're in Tennessee, and it's the same thing. We go out, we look for the local microbreweries, and then when we travel, we try to find the local breweries when we travel. As I said, we have 120 that we've been to so far, and that's spread out over 15 states, including one in Alaska. So we do get around.
It sounds brilliant. It sounds like the life I want to lead when I'm retired is just visiting microbreweries wherever I go. I mean, have you been surprised how much the scene's taken off that there are that many microbreweries?
In some ways, yes, I'm surprised, because I believe I read this would have been around 2013 or 14. There were a little over 2,000 microbreweries in the entire United States. Well, now we're approaching somewhere around 7,000, I believe, if we haven't already gone over that figure. So, yes, it has really taken off. But I'm not surprised from the standpoint that it's outstanding beer when you go to the microbreweries. Yeah. And it's a good atmosphere. I've never heard a word of anger spoken at a microbrewery. It's a very friendly atmosphere. They're places that people just kind of respond to.
That really hit me when you said that in your article that, you know, I've never heard an angry word at a microbrewery. And I thought, he's right. I've been to a few, and typically what you find is the people who have started it up are still there. They're working it. It's their thing. They found the location. They probably took out a loan to get the equipment. They may well have started out in home brewing. And that passion and that positivity just, it can't help but be recreated in the environment they create.
Oh, absolutely. The 100th brewery that we went to, it's called Common John, and it's in Manchester, Tennessee. And when I told the bartender that it was our 100th brewery, well, he called for the owner. He wanted the owner to come meet me. We shook hands. He bought me a beer. The owner's wife come out and said, wow, tell us about 100 breweries you've been to. So it's just a very friendly, positive atmosphere.
And also, I think that the owners are very happy that people are sharing their passion. You know, they want to share what they've made. And that's the other thing I think that's really great about visiting a microbrewery is that, well, you could visit a microbrewery every day for a week and there'd be different selections of beers on every day because it's a moving feast, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there are two particular breweries that we have been to, one in Colorado Springs called Lost Relic, and then another one in Columbia, Tennessee, called Bad Idea, which I think is a great name for a microbrewery.
That's a great name for a brewery. Do you think that was his bank manager or his best mate or someone saying that?
Well, the story is it was two guys, as you would say, best mates, and they're sitting at the kitchen table discussing how they're going to start a brewery. One of them's wife walked through and said, guys, that's a bad idea. They went through with it. But anyway, Bad Idea and Lost Relic, both of them, they have an ever-changing brewery lineup. They never brew the same beer twice.
Wow.
They are always experimenting, try something new all the time.
From all your visits to microbreweries, you've already mentioned a few standout moments, and I love that thing that when you mentioned that it was your 100th, that they kind of made a fuss over that. But what are some other standout moments from the 120?
We recently went to a brewery in Leadville, Colorado. The name of the brewery is 2 Mile Brewery. And the 2 Mile designates their elevation. They're well up over 10,000 feet elevation. And so they advertise themselves as the highest brewery in the United States. And it's a tiny, tiny little place. They only had 3 beers on the menu the day we went. You know, there's another thing that I've seen here with microbreweries, and I'd be interested to know if you have the same phenomenon over there. But almost every brewery seems to have a running club attached to it.
No. Okay, interesting. Is that burning off the calories? Is that what that is?
Yes, you go for a run, you know, 3, 4, 5 miles, come back. You start at the brewery, you end at the brewery.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Have a couple of beers after the run.
You know, there you go. There is balance in life presented out on a plate to you. You go for your run, you enjoy the natural environment, you increase your physical fitness, and you earn your beer. And how?
Exactly.
I've always said this. A beer tastes much better when you've earned it. I tell you, that really came across to me when I lived in Australia for a while, and they had an ad campaign running for a beer called Victoria Bitter, which is it's a lager made in Melbourne, and Melbourne is in the state called Victoria. So Victoria Bitter, one of the oldest beers in Australia. And their advert was Victoria Bitter for a hard-earned thirst. And I just thought, that's a brilliant line. Whoever wrote that line, they've really hit the nail on the head, because when you have been working hard or done some exercise or feel like you've really put an effort into something and you feel like, I deserve this, the beer tastes better.
Oh, yes, I agree 100%.
Right. I wanted to go right back to the beginning. Can you remember the first beer you ever had?
Oh, my. It would have been the summer when I was 15 years old, working with a bunch of other teenage boys on a maintenance crew at the local recreation department. And probably it was a Budweiser or a Pabst Blue Ribbon, or possibly even a Schlitz, which is no longer brewed.
Wow. I've heard of the first two. What's that third one? A Schlitz.
Schlitz. It was just your standard, not that much different than a Budweiser.
We all have those similar stories where, you know, probably underage, and, you know, we're not condoning it, but that happens. It's funny, isn't it? Because those first beers that you have are probably going to be mass produced type of stuff, you know, dime a dozen stuff. But obviously,
Exactly. Yes. Is
beer something that you've drunk throughout your whole life? Or is there a point where it became something more to you? Was there a point where you started to really appreciate it that you can remember?
I think the point where I guess my aha moment, I was in the Air Force, stationed in California. I had a Czech Pilsner Urquell. And that was the first time I got a real hoppy taste in a beer. Yep. And even that's mild compared to the IPAs now. But at that time, it was the real first hoppy. And that was my aha moment. I thought, wow, this is so much better than the other beers I've been drinking. And that led me down the road toward stouts, Guinness and Murphy's stouts, Bass Ale. I can't remember the first IPA that I ever had, but once I got into the IPA style, it really took off. I think the first beer I had that was in that direction in taste was an Anchor Liberty Ale.
That's a great beer.
That would have the first one that moved me in that direction. And that was a couple of years before I retired. So that would have been around 2009, 2010, prior to retiring and moving to Colorado. And then the first brewery we went to there, I tried their IPA and really liked it. And what kind of the tradition, my wife and I, when we go to a new brewery, we get a sampler flight of various styles. But I always tend to like the IPA the best.
And the great thing about it is that, you know, the IPA category can contain so many different beers that taste so different and give you a different experience, but are still technically classed an IPA. So you've got, just saying I like IPA is not going to limit you at all, is it?
No, it's not. And even within the IPA category, I'm not a real fan of the hazy New England style.
No, neither am I.
I prefer what we call a West Coast style.
Oh, and talking of regional styles, where you are in the South, is there a particular style that's emerging there?
I do see some of the breweries here in the South using more fruit flavors and fruit additives going into sours. I recently had a mango IPA at a brewery in Georgia. And, you know, I think the experimentation here in the South is probably going in that direction.
The States overall, it seems that craft brewing is just going from strength to strength. Yeah, I mean, is that still accurate, or, you know, do you see it just growing and growing?
There was a time, I guess, right before we left Colorado Springs, which was 6 years ago, when I was asking some of the brewery owners, how many more breweries can Colorado Springs support?
Hmm.
And because we would see new ones opening all the time. Well, over the past 6 years, I still have family. We have family in Colorado Springs, so we go back there two or three times a year. And they just keep growing. A few have gone out of business, but they've been replaced by others. In Florida, where we lived, we left Colorado and we lived in Florida for 4 years. The area we lived there had no microbreweries when we moved there. Now they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Still a growth industry.
Cardiff, where I live in Wales, it's a much smaller scene, but it's growing. And, you know, there's I went out the other day to get a present for a friend of ours, and I knew there was a kind of area where a few pop-up shops have appeared in storage containers, you know, that type of vibe. I saw that one of the new people that had set up in this little area was a microbrewery. They weren't open at the time, but I could see their sign, so I went and looked them up online. I think this is something that all microbreweries should do, is you need to put an about section or our story section on your website, because I think their stories are so fascinating. You know, that point at which someone who might be home brewing, or like with the Bad Idea Brewery, has a few beers over the kitchen table and says, you know, well, what if we did it? That moment, and then the story from the moment when they decide all the way through to then being successful, I think those stories are so fascinating. So that's just an aside. I think all microbreweries should put that up on their website. But, I read their story and I can't wait to go and visit now. I would agree with you that over here, you said before, I wonder what it's like over here. Certainly in Cardiff, and I know from speaking to my mates in England as well, just like you said in America, yes, there's a lot, but it just continues to grow. And I think that's really good.
You know, your point about the stories behind the breweries. If we have time, if I could give you another quick story about a brewery there in Colorado. The owner, Todd Baldwin, Todd was a artillery officer in the United States Army. And in the Army, the artillery guys, their nickname is Red Leg. They're known as Red Legs. There's a long story behind that. He got out of the Army, and he was working in some civilian industry. I don't know what. He went home one night and told his wife, "I'm miserable. I want to open a brewery." And she said, "Okay." He opened Red Leg Brewery in Colorado Springs on July 4th, 2012. It is now probably the second largest brewery in Colorado Springs. His beers are being distributed regionally throughout the Rocky Mountain area. And he's just moved into a huge new complex, brewing great beer. He's got food on the premises and an unbelievable view of the Rocky Mountains from his upstairs deck. That's Todd's story. He just, "Hey, I don't like what I'm doing. I want to brew beer."
Good on him. And I, it's funny, throughout this interview, you've been mentioning all these breweries, and I've just been thinking, yeah, want to go there. Yep, want to go there. Yep, want to go there. So I'm going to have to do some kind of road trip around the States. Look, I think your passion for microbreweries is so strong. So you're the perfect person to advise people that might be listening. What's your tips for finding a microbrewery to go and visit? And then also, how to get the best out of your visit?
So here in the U.S., we have microbreweries. We have that's only business is to brew beer. Then on the other end of the spectrum, there are restaurants that also happen to brew beer.
Yeah.
And then there's any number of combinations in between. Well, we stay away from the big restaurants that also brew beer. We look for the place who does nothing but brew beer, maybe serve sandwiches and a small menu. And that's what we look for. We try the sampler flights. We try to sample as many of the beers as we can that they produce. And even though I know that I'm always going to lean in the direction of the IPAs, I still want to sample the stouts. I want to sample their red ale and their lager. And my wife is really big into the sours. And if we have time to tell you about the blueberry sour that she went crazy over, have we got time?
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
SJ Brewery in Northeast Florida brewed a one-time blueberry sour. It was called a blueberry cobbler sour. I don't know if England, but cobbler is a dessert here in the United States. And when they served it, they lined the rims of the glasses with sugar and cinnamon.
Ah, lovely.
So you get this blueberry sour over the sugar and the cinnamon. Well, my wife loved it. I think she had three that night. And she wanted to buy a growler of the beer. But because of the various laws in Florida, they couldn't sell growlers of a one-time beer. Right. You know, they only brewed it for this one time. Well, she offered them $100 for a growler of that beer. So, yes, she loves her sours. And so this all goes back to just recommendation. You go in a microbrewery, try everything they have.
What are the kind of standard measures that microbreweries would give you in the States?
Well, typically we have the sampler flight will be, more times than not, it will be four samples. Each one will be either 4 or 5 ounces.
Okay.
Then typically you can get 12 or 16 ounce full pours of a beer. If it's a very high ABV, go back to the Fulcrum at Smiling Toad. He only sold that in 8 ounce portions.
Yeah.
Because it was so strong. But yes, we'll go in, we'll get the sampler flight, we'll have the little small glasses, we'll try several of those. And then usually have one of what I call an adult portion of the one that I like the best.
And you're taking your time. You know, you've got nowhere to get to. So you're just, you know, taking in the vibe. And I remember you saying on one of your articles that a lot of these microbreweries will have food trucks either visiting or even as part of the brewery. So you might have some food and you kind of make an afternoon out of it.
Sure. You know, I don't want to rush in, drink a beer, take off and leave. No, we go and we, as you say, we make an afternoon of it. We have something to eat with it. We leisurely sample the beers. We look for interesting conversation if anybody's willing to engage in conversation. And typically they are.
I remember you, another thing that you mentioned in one of your articles was, and you were trying to get across the point that you'll meet all sorts of people in the microbreweries. And I think there was one brewery where you said at one end of the bar was an Air Force guy. And at the other end of the bar was a hippie.
Exactly. Yes. One end, he was an Air Force fighter pilot and he left and I gravitated to the other end of the bar. And there was an old hippie who had been to 45 Grateful Dead concerts. You don't get that combination every day.
No. You really don't. Listen, Micah, it's been fantastic talking to you and I could talk to you for hours about beer, but thank you for sharing all your stories and insights from all these visits to microbreweries. And I'm sure you've got many, many more in you. I mean, presumably there's no end goal. You just keep visiting them, right?
That's right. Well, we're working on our second 100 now. And once we hit 200, we'll see how much farther we go.
When you hit 200, you've got to come back on the podcast. I mean, if I'm still going with this podcast when you hit 200, then we're both going to be very happy because you'll have hit 200 and I'll have done a lot more podcasts. But thank you so much.
I would love to. And hey, thank you so much for letting me be your first guest. It's an honor and I have really enjoyed it.
Oh, Micah, the pleasure is all mine. So I would definitely want to, A, come and have a beer with you. I think I'm going to say that to every guest on this podcast, actually. I want to come and have a beer with you. I want to visit some of these microbreweries. I definitely want to visit Bad Idea. In fact, I'm going to be Googling them as soon as I get off this interview. And the one, the Red Leg one, sounds incredible with the views out over the mountains. That is one on my wish list. If I am ever in Tennessee, I will be calling you up and demanding that you have a beer with me. I hope that's okay.
Oh, please do. Please do. And if you ever decide to go to Colorado Springs, let me know about that too, because that will be a good excuse to go out and visit the grandson and have a beer with you at the same time.
Fantastic. All right, Micah, have a wonderful day, and thanks for being the first guest on the Nantvar Brews podcast.
Oh, thank you.